Hi, this is Mike McNamara, and you're listening to All Marine Radio on your home for it, the one and only All Warrior Radio Network.
Get away, need a change from this burning sea. Another time, another town, another everything.
The guy you're going to meet today, the Marine you're going to meet today, is somebody that on this program you've heard about for a while. I've known him for almost a year, and so it's an honor for me to welcome Matt Kiker of the United States Marine Corps to All Marine Radio. Matt, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Matt?
I got no issues, man. I got no issues. I just want to tell you, man, I've been looking forward to having you on All Marine Radio. I talk about you all the time, or not all the time, but on a regular basis, and how inspiring your story is, and it should be to people. So it's pretty cool to have you on so you could talk about your story and tell people about it in your own words. So thanks for doing this, and welcome.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I feel honored, honestly. It means a lot to me. And if I can contribute and help people out, then I'll do my best and try.
All right. Well, that's what we're going to do today. But before we can, like, decide if we're going to believe you, we got to learn about you. So born and raised where?
I was born and raised in Mobile, Alabama, in 8 Mile, which you could say is the hood in Alabama, the Mobile area. Grew up there my whole life, and then if it was from the Marine Corps, I'd still be there.
So how does you're growing up in Alabama? You know, most of the time people join the Marine Corps, there's somebody growing up that was a Marine, somebody in their family was a Marine, they grew up with pictures on the walls or books in the house or uncles or dads talking about it. How does the Marine Corps get on your radar?
Honestly, me and my cousin are actually the first ones in my family to join any military. So, my growing up, I've always been, like, patriotic. I always, you know, wanted to do something bigger than myself and contribute to my country. From watching, you know, war movies, from hearing about stories from friends' fathers. My high school year, my ninth grade, 10th grade year, I started getting real big into video games. I started getting Call of Duty, started playing, like, as a sniper and stuff.
Right.
And I thought it'd be really good to actually contribute and actually go out there and do that. So, I talked to a recruiter in high school and, decided to, hey, let's join the Marines. Well, at the time I was dating this girl named Megan, and she told me that if I was going to join the military or any branch or anything like that, then we weren't going to work out. So I cut it off, but they still had all my stuff ready. And then I, graduated high school. I went and became an apprentice technician. I was one ASC certification away from being a master technician. I worked
now
for a year.
Now,
outside of high school.
Explain that to people, because you have a very, very high aptitude for things mechanical, yes?
Yes, absolutely. So it started off in 10th grade. I was taking... So I'm not the smartest man, but math was my stronghold, and I was really good at it.
Okay, let me just tell you something. When somebody says, I'm not the smartest guy, but I'm really good at math, there's something wrong with that statement, okay? Because dumbasses aren't good at math.
I mean, I can put two and two together, you know, make four, so.
Evidently.
But I realized that I was good at math, and a lot of my friends thought I was stupid as hell. So I started taking math electives. In my 10th grade year, I was taking pre-calculus. Taking pre-calculus as an elective. And I chose it because I wanted to get my GPA up. And I remember it was like my first week in the class.
Hey, just so you know, I don't know that that's ever been said by a Marine in the history of the Marine Corps. I wanted to get my GPA up, so normally this sentence completes with, so I took an extra PE class. Okay? You don't hear a Marine say, so I took pre-calculus.
Well, I got put into other electives. I got put in ROTC. I got kicked out of ROTC for fighting. they told me I would never make it in any type of military branch because of my attitude and because I like to fight. Science, I wasn't the smartest. PE, I would kind of just go work out in the gym and really wouldn't do anything besides go to the gym. So I decided to take the math, and I remember I was in my first week of taking pre-calculus. I took everything else. I had all my math done, so I was just going to take everything that I could. And I remember my first week in there, I was working out this long problem on this calculator, and this old, like, fat man, crazy-looking dude, busted up in the classroom. He yelled, "Who wants to work on an airplane?" Not hesitating, I didn't hesitate at all. I stuck my hand up in the air and said, "Me." He pulls me out of the classroom. Three other guys get out of the classroom. We go and take this trade school class for aviation. I pass it with flying colors. And then my last test, you know, he was explaining that every bolt that you put in an airplane, you have to sign off on it, and there's a black box in every airplane. If the airplane goes down, it will be able to figure out what bolt came undone. And if that bolt came undone and you signed off on that bolt, and it wasn't correct by the third decimal, then that plane's on your hands. Then you're going to have to pay for it. You're going to be reliable. You're going to take responsibility for that plane going down. And I said, I'm only 17 years old. I'm not taking that responsibility. So I walked my happy ass over to the automotive shop, and I said, "Hey, I just graduated aviation course over there. I don't want to work on airplanes. Can I work on, you know, cars?" And they enrolled me into the class. And my 11th grade year and 12th grade year, I was in those courses. I took all my ASC student certifications in that course in a year, and I got every single one. And in my 12th grade year, I got referred out to the biggest dealership in Mobile, Alabama, which is McConnell's Automotive, GMC, and Buick, and alongside with Porsche. So I got hired onto there, and I would go to school from 6 a.m. to 10 or 11 a.m., and then I would change over to my work clothes and go work. And I got all my ASC certifications in my 12th grade year instead of student certifications. They put me through the courses, and I was one certification away from being a master technician, and my last certification was electrical, and I didn't want to get it because they were going to make me work on Priuses and all that other stuff, and I didn't feel like working on hybrids. So I worked there for a year. I made great money. I moved out of my house at 17. I've been taking care of me and my family since I was 14, helping out, paying bills, trying to do my best. 17, I realized I was making entirely too much money to live there, so I went ahead and moved out.
So you're a certified, one certification away from being a master mechanic at the largest automobile dealership in Mobile, Alabama at 17. Approximately how much money you make in a year?
My first year out of high school, I made $90,000 a year. So, I mean, it was really, really good. I was making anywhere between $1,500 to $1,200 on the regular every week. I was consistently pulling engines out and transmissions out. The old heads were in the shop got real pissed off at me because I was taking all their work from them because I was moving so fast because I was young. I was faster than them.
And you didn't realize there's a way we do things around here, son.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they broke it down for me. So they got mad. They talked to the boss, Charles. Charles moved me over to major engine work. So they gave me two bays, and I would always have one on the lift, and I'd always have one parked in one of the bays, and I was just moving back and forth, and I would just bust them out left and right, trying to get everything done. And, I mean, I would do so much in a week that, I mean, by Wednesday, I would already have 40 hours. So I'd have 40 hours by Wednesday and then pull more by Friday. And I had a lot of overtime, and it was great money. It was really good money. And then the Marine Corps came my life again because I've always been patriotic. And I remember the Boston bombing kind of happened. and that really pissed me off. It really got me fired up, and I said, that's wrong. That's wrong. They shouldn't do that. You know, innocent people died that day, and they did not deserve it. I mean, families lost loved ones that they did not deserve over fucking religion, and that's stupid. And it got me fired up, and I waited, and I took a year working, and I remember the recruiters in Tennessee that got shot up. A guy walked in, and apparently he was affiliated with ISIS, and he walked in, he shot three of the recruiters, and two of them died.
Right.
And two of them had Purple Hearts.
Right.
And they went and served, and they protected the country. And it made me so mad, because I remember hearing about it. Because I got home from work, and it was about 6 p.m. I got back from work, I sat down on the couch, I kicked my shoes off, and I remember I was watching TV, and I clicked on the news, and that was the first thing I saw. And it got me so fired up, it got me so mad, that I called my boss, Charles, and said, hey, man, I'm really sick, I'm not going to be able to come in the morning, which is a complete lie. And I went to the recruiter's office, and I said, hey, man, I want my papers, I want to enlist. And he said, well, what do you want to do? You can do anything with a wrench. You can do anything mechanically. You want an aviation job? You need an MOS? You can have it. You know, you can do from the bottom all the way to the top, whatever you want mechanically. And I said, I want to be another limb. I want to be infantry. And he told me I was stupid. He told me I was dumb, and I battled with him for like a month, honestly. About me enlisting, because he didn't want to take me, because he told me that I was making great money, I had great benefits, I was established, I was doing better than most people. And he said that it would be a drastic change in my life if I joined, and I said, that's fine. So eventually he signed me on, and I signed all the paperwork.
Well, and you know what he's trying to do. He's got these other higher requirements that he can fill. Right, and you're one of the guys that tests into all those aviation maintenance, right? Radio maintenance, all these things that are, you know, high priority but low density relative to people, you know, testing into them. Here you walk in and you test off the chart, but you don't want to do that. You want to be a grunt.
Yep, exactly. I mean, and it blew his mind, which was hilarious, because he was a grunt. He was a grunt, and he told me that it was dumb of me to do it. Well, I mean, long story short, though, I mean, I got in. I waited, I think, nine months. I waited 9 months to go to boot camp, saved up a good bit of money. And I went out to boot camp, and boot camp wasn't really hard for me. Physical requirements wasn't hard. I got in a lot of fights in boot camp, and I've been in the Marines ever since. I got 2.5 months left. I'm about to get out. And I got a job lined up for me on the other side.
So let's talk about you and I cross paths in January. We're doing the first time we ever did post-traumatic winning for the 2nd Marine Division. We're at the Staff NCO Academy at Camp Johnson and getting ready to do it. And the audio-visual guy comes over and he says, hey, Mac, you need to come talk to this Marine. And I said, why? What's going on? He said, well, he's saying that he's not going to stay, and he's pretty agitated. And I said, all right. And so I walk over, and I met Matt, and he was pissed. And I remember his hands were shaking. He was so pissed. He said, he looked at me and goes, sir, I cannot sit through this shit. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I've had too much shit happen in my life, and I can't sit through bullshit like this. It bothers me. I can't do it. And I said, all right, well, why don't you come with me? So we went into this coffee shop that they have there, and we sat, and we were talking. And then General Furness walks in, and he thought we were having a good time. And so he walks in and says, hey, what's going on? And then he saw, when we all turned, he saw the serious looks, and he goes, oh, shit, what's going on? So But I want to go back to explain to people how you got there that day, some things that happened in your life. So let's start about how you grew up. I mean, the first biggest incident is your dad's suicide. But before that, there was even, I mean, you were a kid that was growing up in difficult circumstances, to say the least.
Yeah, so, beginning of my life, as far as I can remember, the suicide of my dad was the biggest thing. And I have a faint memory before that of my my Uncle Daniel. His brother, he died in a car accident. He was on his way to go get a crack rock, and he got T-boned. He got T-boned off the side of the road by an 18-wheeler, apparently. Died on impact. So I lost my uncle. And then before that, my Uncle Wesley, also another brother of my dad, he murdered my aunt. He shot her in front of my family. And I was so young at that time that I really didn't understand. I didn't know, honestly. But that was the first thing that really happened with my Uncle Wesley murdered my aunt. And then after that, my Uncle Daniel died. We were pretty close. Probably one of my favorite uncles. We had a relationship with him. And then he had T-bone on the side of the road getting a crack rock. He was a raging alcoholic. He used to abuse everyone. He lived in my mom's and my father's house for a little while. Me and my brother would sometimes watch him come over. He would be so drunk that, I mean, he would go after my cousins and beat them, and my aunt, and beat them in front of us. My mom would kind of lock us up in the room for a little while, and then my mom would handle it. My dad worked offshore on an oil rig, so he wasn't there a lot. And then at 9 years old, my father committed suicide on the phone with my mom, me, and my brother. Originally what happened with my dad was, he got into a huge depression because he lost his brothers. One's in jail, one just died. He wanted approval from his mother, my grandmother, which she'd never give it to him, called him a disappointment all the time, a failure to the family, and it was just really hard on him. He grew up, he was abused by his original father, my Papa Como, a horrible man. Held my mom up at gunpoint before, held my dad up at gunpoint. You abused my uncles from the time that they could walk, from the time that they left the house. He had his demons that he was going through, and he was super depressed. And instead of getting help, he went to a doctor, and they prescribed him so much medicine that he lost his mind in front of me and my family. And me and my brother watched it happen. We watched him go from this great father to this man that was just batshit crazy. I mean, he didn't know his left from right. He was having dreams that and nightmares that he was going to kill my mom. He was going to kill me and my brothers. And he was terrified of that. He was very, very terrified of that. And he wanted to kill himself before he killed us. That was the bottom line in his head, was he wanted to make sure that we lived and he died, because he didn't think he was going to be able to stop himself because of all this medicine that he was on. Well, I remember the first time I really saw something crazy was my dad, like a dumbass, took uppers and downers at the same time. He took all this medicine in one go, and he was dying and waking up. He was convulsing in his chair, and me and my brother was watching him convulse in the chair. And he was going to die in front of us. And I remember my mom gets up, and she takes charge, and she grabs me and my brothers, and she runs us back to the room. She tells us to stay in the room, don't come out. And she calls the police and gets ambulance there. Ambulance gets there, and my dad, for some reason, I mean, he still has fight in him somehow, and he's willing, like, he's gonna die, he's gonna try to die, and he starts trying to fight the paramedics, but, I mean, he's so fucked up that he can't do it, so they get him to the ambulance, and they start pumping him immediately. They save his life. And they put him in the hospital, and we go and see my dad a couple of times, and the doctor's still prescribing him more medicine, and not actually helping him, get a therapist or talk about anything that's going on in his life. So, I mean, he's still going through it, and he's still losing his fucking mind. Well, since he's a grown man, he decides to check himself out at the hospital. And my mom tells the doctors, do not let him check out of the hospital, because if you do, he's going to kill himself. He needs help. And my sons will lose their father, and I will lose my husband. And the doctor looked at my mom and said, I don't care. You're not paying me enough money. So my dad checks himself out 2 days later. He wakes up. 2 days later, he's back at the house. He wakes up in the morning. He comes up to me and my brother. He pulls us out of the bed. He talks to us one-on-one. He gives us the man talk. Tells my oldest brother, you're going to be the man of the house. Take care of your mother. You know, you're going to meet a woman. Make sure you use protection. He goes through the whole nine yards with us. And he talks to me about the same thing. And it starts to really get in my mind because I don't know what's going on. He goes to my mom's room. He wakes her up, gives her a kiss, tells her he loves her.
And you're like nine years old, right?
Yes, 9 years old. 9 years old. And things just wasn't adding up for me. Because I've been a realist since I was that young. I try to look at the bigger picture of everything. And he goes in my mom's room, kisses her, tells her he loves her, and he'll be back. My mom was actually up, and she knew that was the last time she was going to see him. And he leaves, and my mom wakes up. She gets us up. We're going around. We get in the car, my mom, she starts trying to look for him because she can't get a hold of him. I mean, no one knows where he is, nothing like that. And, I mean, it starts getting late in the day, and we're driving, and we get a phone call. My mom gets a phone call from my father, and he starts off with, the speaker was so loud, me and my brother were able to hear it. We're in the back seat. And he started off with, you know that I love y'all, right? And I'll never forget it because I remember hearing it. You know that I love y'all, right? And my mom just starts crying immediately. And she's like, yes, Chris, I know you love us. Where are you at? What's going on? And he starts talking. He starts saying, hey, you know, it's really hard. He starts talking and, you know, y'all will be fine without me. Everything will be fine, and I love y'all, and make sure the boys know that I love them with all my heart. And I remember I heard the first gunshot go off. He shoots it in the air, I guess. So my mom, I mean, she's crying. She immediately takes charge again. She drives to my aunt's house and drops us off really fast. And she's on the phone with him the whole time, and she's like, Chris, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it, don't do it. She drops us off.
So, Matt, the first shot was he just fired the gun?
I guess. I don't know if he shot himself, messed up, and still was able to talk.
Right.
But
right.
The only thing I can think of, he shot it just to let her know, like, it's coming to an end.
Right.
Dropped us off. And then me and my brother are sitting at my aunt's house. My mom, actually, figures out where he is, drives to my Uncle Daniel's grave, and on the phone with him the whole time, and then by the time she pulls up to the grave, or the cemetery area,
right.
Cops are already there.
Oh,
cops
wow.
are there, they're trying to talk him out of it, and when my mom shows up, she gets out of the car, and she heard the gun go off again, and she watched my father drop. And the cops try to restrain her, and my mom starts screaming, that's my husband, that's my husband. And she was right there, she saw everything. So he died. Killed himself. And then my mom, you know, I guess takes care of everything. She comes back to us. We're at my aunt's house. My whole family is there for some reason. My brother's like, oh, cool, family's here, you know. Me, personally, I'm like, this is really weird. My dad's not here, and my mom is gone. And she's crying. Something's wrong. She was on the phone with my dad. Something's wrong here. And she finally shows up. And when she shows up, she's with the pastor and all these people for, like, support, emotional support. And they pull us to the couch in the living room, and I remember I'm sitting there, and my mom, she tries to explain it the best way she can. She sits down with us, and she goes, all right, boys, I love y'all. You know your dad loves y'all, and he's no longer with us. My brother starts crying immediately, and for some reason, I don't start crying. I don't cry, and I'm looking. I'm confused. I said, what do you mean he's no longer with us? Did he leave? Where is he going, you know? And she said, he passed away. I said, what do you mean he passed away? Is he dead? And she couldn't say it. And my grandmother, my mom's mom, she looked at me. She said, yes, 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 he's dead. He's no longer with us. And I said, how did he do it? Because I heard him talk to my mom on the phone. And she said he killed himself. I said, well, how so? And she said he shot himself in the head. And I didn't cry. I didn't cry. I stood up and I walked away. And I went by myself.
And you're 9 years old.
9 years old, yeah.
Crazy.
I'm 9 years old. I didn't cry. I stood up and I walked away. And everyone went to touch me, and I pushed everyone off, and I said, don't fucking touch me. I was 9 years old. I said, don't fucking touch me. And I walked out, and I was sitting there, and I was trying to understand it. I said, what the fuck? My dad killed himself. He had sons, and he had a wife, he had family. Why the fuck did he kill himself? And it just came over me. I said, I need to be there for my mom. And I went back inside, and I held my mom and my brother. And I didn't cry. And that night, when everyone went to sleep, I stayed up, and I cried by myself. And I didn't really have anyone there. Everyone was taking it their own way.
Right.
So, I mean, that was the first, I mean, that's the biggest memory I have of the whole situation.
All right. Talk to me about, let me kind of fast forward you to some other things. You at one point, and you don't need to go into the details of this, talk to people about it the way you want to, but, I mean, obviously that was very difficult for your mom, and you're now 10 years old, you're cooking, you're taking care of your brother. And you actually go in and have a conversation with your mom. Tell everybody about that, because this is not what 10-year-olds normally do.
Yeah, so I mean, I kind of noticed I was different the more the time went by, because I was always there for my family. My mom got addicted to Xanax really bad, and she would hit me every now and then. She hit me a couple times. I mean, things got rough for a little while. She didn't want to get out of her bed. She was always high, consistently. She didn't clean. She didn't cook. So I took charge, and I learned how to cook, and started waking my brother up for school. Started cooking for her, cooking for me, my brother, and taking care of everything. And I remember my mom coming. We came home from school, and my mom said, I was cool, and we talked, and we could tell that she was high. And I said, we're going to the room. And we went to the room for a couple hours. I came out, and I said, Mom, you know, when's dinner going to be ready? And she said, oh, I'm about to make it. Just go back to the room, you know, start getting ready for bed, and by the time you get done with the shower, dinner will be ready, and y'all can eat. And I said, okay, cool. So I go back to my brother, hey, you know, let's get ready for bed. Mama said that, you know, dinner can be ready by the time we get in the showers, and then, you know, that'll be that. Well, my mom comes, back to the room in a couple hours, and we're sitting there in the bed. My mom comes up to us, and she's like, all right, good night. I love y'all. And I said, Mom, we haven't ate today. And she said, and she just looked at me. She got so mad. I don't know what came over, but she just looked at me, and it was a ball of anger, and she hit me, two times in the face. Just punched me. And I remember I got so mad that I stood up because I had enough of it. And I grabbed my mom, and I put her against the wall. Because my mom's only 5 foot even.
Right.
I put her against the wall, and I said, I'll be damned if you hit me again. And my brother jumped up. And when my brother jumped up, he grabbed her, and he said, what the hell? What's going on? What are you doing? And I said, what are you doing? What's going on? My mom couldn't talk. She just started crying. She dropped down to her knees. Well, me and my brother actually picked her up, and we walked her to her room. And we laid her in bed. I picked her up and put her in bed. I tucked her in. She cried and cried and cried, and she went to sleep. And I got up and I cooked for me and my brother. And a week goes by. My mom does not get out of her bed. She's just consistently crying. I mean, it's bad. She's high consistently. And I'm cooking for her. And I couldn't take it no more. And I grabbed my brother and I said, we got to talk. We got to talk to our mom. We got to get our mom back. And he was on board with it. He said, yeah, you're right. So,
and again, just so everybody knows, and now you're 10.
Yes, yes. I'm 10. I'm 10 or 11, one or the other. It's only been a year or two, and it's been going on. I'm pretty sure it was 10 because my stepdad wasn't in the picture yet. So me and my brother walk into the room, And my mom's sitting there, and she looked at us, and she said, what's going on? Are y'all okay? And I said, no, we need to have a talk. Yeah. And I said, we need to have a talk, and I need you to listen to us. And my brother was like, you know, he was on board. He was like, yeah, we're going to have a talk. And I sat down at the edge of the bed. My mom sat up, and I remember looking at her. And I was looking at her, and it was really weird because it was the first time that I was looking at my mom, not just as my mom, but as a friend. Someone that she, you know, she needs to hear the hard part. Because I don't think she's understanding. I didn't think she understood. And I was 10 years old, 11 years old, and I was already understanding what was, you know, what was going on. And I remember looking at her, and I said, listen, like, our father died. Your husband died. He's dead. He is not coming back. Ever. He will never come back. He took his own life. I lost my father. You lost your husband. But we did not lose our mother, and you did not lose your sons. We need our mom back. We lost him, and we're not going to lose you. And my mom started crying. And we talked for about 40 minutes. And it was me and my brother just going back on what's going on. And I said, Mom, I don't think you realize, but like, I've been cooking for everyone. And you haven't been feeding us. You've hit me a couple of times. I mean, things are not good. And we're losing you. And my mom, she pulled herself together. And she got out of that bed. And she started cooking again. And she started taking care of us again. And I mean, she started being our mother. So, I mean, I had that talk with her. My brother was on board with it. And we helped my mom out. We brung her back, in a sense. And I had to break the harsh reality to her, like, he's dead and he's gone. And it sucked, but it's what she needed to hear.
Let's fast forward to in sixth grade, and one of your good friends commits suicide.
Yeah, Victor. His name's Victor. Yeah, I don't remember his last name, but I remember his name was Victor. In sixth grade, he hung himself. He got picked on. So I got picked on a little bit in school. In middle school, I was short and fat, and he got picked on too for whatever reason, and he was one of my first friends. One of my first friends, and me and him became really good friends, and we hung out all the time, and it seemed like everything was fine, but he was always coming to school with bruises on him. Something was going on with him. One time he came to school with crutches, with a broke leg. I will never forget this. And I remember asking him, I said, Victor, dog, you're coming to school with like, all these bruises. Like, what's going on with you? Like, what, are you okay? And he got a little upset, and he said, no, man, like, I'm not okay. He said, my mom sexually abuses me. She touches me. She does weird stuff to me. I said, what do you mean? You know, we're in sixth grade.
Right.
She's like, she does stuff to me. I'm not supposed to tell people. And my mom and my dad are divorced. And, you know, my dad, when I see my dad, he abuses me and he beats me and he hits me all the time. He says all this stuff to me. And then, you know, the other day he pushed me down my stairs and I broke my leg. And now I'm on crutches. And now I come to school, and every time I come to school, I get picked on. I don't have a safe place, and you're my only friend. So things are not good. And I said, man, I mean, I'll be your friend. Like, is there anything I can do to help you? He really wouldn't let me do anything, wouldn't let me help anyone. I wish I would have said something to someone about it.
Right.
And eventually it did get brought up. It did get brought up. And the school got involved for a little while. And then, I mean, he was still getting messed with. And he just couldn't take it one day, and he wrote a letter explaining why he's killing himself, and he hung himself in his room. He hung himself and he died, and he wrote a letter, and he wrote out to his mom and his dad that it's their fault. And I was his only friend, and he thanked me in the letter for being his friend. And that was my buddy in sixth grade, Victor.
When you hear this story, when you hear Matt's story, you're like, okay, he's making this shit up, right? Like, because it's too crazy. It's too crazy. Little kid going through that. And then you join the Marine Corps. in your one of your brothers commits suicide. Walk us through that.
So my brother Zach, we took him in. We adopted him basically back in middle school. So he came from where did he come from? Wyoming, I think. Or Indiana. He came from some, like, yeah, he came from fucking nowhere. And his family was horrible. And we became really good friends in sixth grade, seventh grade. And I got in a fight. I got in a huge fight. And I picked this kid up, and I slammed him on a backpack. And it was Zach's backpack. I slammed him on Zach's backpack. And it broke his, $20, like, cologne that he got from Walmart that he really liked. And, it stopped the fight because that got involved. I slammed him, and all you hear is, "What the fuck, man?" And I'm on top of this kid. I'm like, I look at him like, "What?" And he's like, "You broke my cologne." And then I'm like, "Oh, man, I'm sorry." And we get snatched up, go to the principal's office, and I get in trouble. I come back to school, and I felt bad. So I went back to Walmart, and I got him a cologne, and I gave it to him. I said, "Hey, I'm really sorry about that. Here's the cologne." And he was happy about it. He laughed it off, and we became really, really good friends. And then his parents, I saw we hung out every single day, every weekend. I mean, if you didn't see him with me, then you know something was wrong, or you know me with him. It's just we were always together. And he knew everything about me. He knew everything that I've been through. And he was, you know, basically I was his rock. He was my rock. He was telling me about his life, how everything was going on. And we were always there for each other when we didn't have anyone else. And ninth grade year, I remember I was at school in the morning. I didn't see him. So I called him. I said, "Hey, man, where are you at?" And I'm like, "What's going on?" And he picked up the phone. And he said, "My family left me, man." I said, "What do you mean they left you?" He said, they packed up their bags last night while I was sleeping, and they went home. To wherever the fuck they're from. And they left him a letter on the refrigerator saying, "You have friends and family here." No, you know, not family. "You have friends here that will take care of you. Good luck." So I got up and I said, "I gotta go. I got a family emergency." And I got up and I called my mom. We went over to his house. And we sat down. We talked to him. And he cried for a little while. And we took him in. And he was with us ever since. And then about my, 11th grade year, he moved out and went to his buddy's house, Garrett's house, and he lived with them for the time being. But it was funny because he only slept there, but he would always come over, and we were always doing something with each other. We worked some of the same jobs together. So we took him in, and that was my brother. I mean, he may not be blood, but he's my fucking brother. He's closer to me, and he will always be closer than my actual blood brother. I joined the Marines, so I moved out of my parents' house at 17. I got my own place, and I'm living with this girl. We got this apartment together. I'm paying all the bills, helping her out with her college and free. We're together. High school ends, and I mean he's over there 24/7 with us. And then I decided to leave and go to the Marines a year after high school because of the recruiters. So I leave, and then my first year in, I get a phone call on a Sunday, which is my mom's birthday. I don't think I've actually told you this, Mac, so I think you're about to figure this out. Sunday. It's my mom's birthday. She calls me, and she says, "Zach's dead." And I said, "What do you mean?" And it's the first time that it actually threw me off hearing about someone dying, because at this point in my life, I'm used to hearing someone's dead, and it really doesn't throw me off anymore. But this really threw me off, and I got mad at my mom, and I said, "Mom, this is not a fucking joke. This is not funny. I don't think this is funny at all." And she said, "No, son, I'm really sorry. He killed himself last night at your apartment. He jumped off your balcony. Head first. He hit head first. It was literally the perfect way that he could have landed. If he landed in any other position, he would have survived. But he hit it dead on, and he died." So I lost him. And he wrote me a letter. He wrote me a letter at my apartment. And he explained to me that I was his brother and he loved me. He was so sorry for everything that he did to me. And I didn't understand it. I did not understand what he was sorry for, because he's never done anything to me that I knew of, because that was my brother. That was my, I mean, that we did everything together. I mean, you know, he was my rock. He knew everything about me. And, I mean, I did anything for that motherfucker. I would do anything for that motherfucker. If he was still here, I would still do shit for him. I mean, it was hard. It was hard hearing it. I lost my mind. And, I went home and I buried him. And, when I was home, someone took his phone, this girl named Haley, she got a hold of this phone somehow, and they took screenshots of the girl that I proposed to. Her name's Bree, the same girl that was living in apartments. I just proposed to her. I was going to get married to her. And someone took screenshots of Zach's phone and sent them to my phone of them sexting and their sex messages, and they had a thing. They were sleeping with each other for like a year, and I didn't know about it. And the caption was, and the message, all the screenshots, the caption was, "You deserve to know." So I found out she was cheating on me, and I lost my brother, and it was on my mom's birthday.
By the time you and I had crossed paths, how long had it been since Zach had killed himself?
Two years.
All right, and so you've done so when you and I first met, and you looked at me and said, "I can't sit through this shit," right? You had sat through Marine Corps classes about PTSD and shit like that, yes?
Yeah, I have, definitely.
And that's why you were headed for the door?
Oh, yeah, well, I mean, in a sense, yeah, absolutely. Are you asking why I didn't want to sit there?
Yeah, why were you leaving?
So December, what is it, December 22nd, I think, it was my dad's anniversary, for his death anniversary, I guess you'd say. And then y'all had the class in January.
Right, first, I want to say the second week in January, it was like January 12th or something like that.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was still fresh. I mean, I always go through these moods. I mean, right. When it comes around to my mom's birthday and Zach's anniversary and losing my uncles and my friends and my family, usually on those days or coming up on those days, my mood just changes. I get real emotional, and no one really knows it. I hide it, but I mean, deep down, like I'm not feeling good. And it just passed my dad's death anniversary, and I remember just not feeling good. And the first thing I hear is, "Hey, you got to go to a mandatory suicide prevention class." And I said, "I'm not fucking going to this dumbass shit. This is not for me. You can't fucking tell me about suicide. I've been through, you know," in my head, I was like, "I've been through more suicide than most people. I'm not fucking sitting through this shit. This is fucking garbage. I'm not doing it." And I was fucking pissed. And I remember showing up, and I remember walking in, and I said, who the hell is running this?" And they say, "Who's asking?" I was like, "I'm asking. I'm asking because I'm not fit to do this shit."
I'm asking Lance Corporal Kiker. That's who the fuck's asking.
Yeah, I said, "I'm not fucking sitting through this shit. I don't give a fuck what's going on. I don't fucking care if this is mandatory or not. Give me whatever paperwork you got to give me. I'm not sitting through this shit. You don't know me. I don't give a fuck about you." Okay? And he pulls me aside and says, "Hold up one second." And he walks away and he comes up to you. And that's when he says, "You need to talk to this guy." And you come out there, and I remember you said, what's the problem? What's going on, man? And I said, I'm not sitting through this shit. And I go off, and I remember shaking because I was so fucking pissed off. And I wasn't sober at the time either, so, I mean, I was kind of not, I wasn't drunk, but I'd already had some in my system. I was already drinking, trying to work through everything. I've been drinking for a while. I started drinking, trying to push down my emotions and not face my demons head on. And, I mean, that was just a reality check, too, just going to that fucking class, you know. I didn't want that. I didn't want that at all. I mean, I had all these thoughts going in my head. I was thinking about my brothers, thinking about my friends that killed themselves. And Victor's not the only friend that's killed herself, and my brother, and my dad, and, you know, some of my uncles on my mom's side. So, I mean, it's just, I wasn't ready for it at all. And I remember coming up to you, talking to you, and I remember going off, and I wanted to say so much stuff to you, I just couldn't get it out, though. I couldn't get it out. And I remember you brought me into this room, and you sat me down, and you just started talking to me. You said, you know, what's going on? What happened? You need to talk. You're hurting. I can see it. Everyone in this room can see it. You're hurting. You're shaking, for God's sakes. You got to talk. Something's trying to come out.
And you looked at me and you said, does it ever stop hurting?
Yep. It tears in my eyes. I said, does it ever stop hurting? And it made me so happy to hear you say it, too, because you said no. I was so happy for you to say it, because you have no idea. Because I didn't go to therapy. I haven't went to therapy my whole entire fucking life. I never got help. All these doctors wanted to put me on antidepressants. If you talk to anyone that has a medical file on me and my family history and friends and what I've been through, I'm a severe high risk for suicide. I have severe anxiety and I have severe depression. And I have severe insomnia. I don't sleep. But I've never talked to anyone. And I remember asking you that, and you said no. And it was such a relief, because if you talk to anyone, they're going to tell you eventually it stops. They'll go, it'll stop eventually. You'll move on. It's okay. And they'll fill your head with bullshit, and I hate bullshit. And I remember talking to you, and you said, no, it doesn't. But. And you said, but. And you said, you can take that trauma, and you can turn it into joy. But it will never stop hurting. Your shoulders will get stronger. I think my shoulders are as strong as it gets at this point.
You didn't even know, though. You didn't even know. Then General Furness walks in, right?
Yeah.
He thought we were having a good time. He says, hey, what's going on? And then he sees the looks on our faces. He goes, what is going on? And then he pulls up a chair. And then he ordered you, right? He said, hey, let me tell you what's going to happen. He said, you sit in the back, right, by the door, and if you need to leave and come back, but you need to stay for this class. You need to see this class. And you looked at him, and you said the right thing. Yes, sir. And then he got up to leave, and he's standing up, right? And he looks at you, and he says, stand up, Marine. And you stand up, and he gave you a hug, right?
Yeah, and so it was so weird, because I remember, I remember he sits there, and he sits down, and he goes, look, I'm ordering you. He said, I'm ordering you. You're gonna sit in this class. He said, if you cannot take it, though, if you cannot take it, I want you to get up, and I want you to walk out. I want you to take a breather. But I need you to stay. I don't care if you're outside the building, you can hear me. And you can hear us, but I need you to stay. I said, yes, sir. And he said, okay, stand up, Marine. I stood up, and I was expecting them, you know, do Omnis Dominus, you know, go in the classroom and sit down, be gone. And he hugged me. And I broke down and cried.
So Jeffrey, he walked out, and then Matt and I are walking, I don't know, 50 feet behind him. And I look at Matt, and I said, hey, you just got hugged by the CG of the division. And he starts laughing. He said, I'm not going to lie, sir. That was kind of weird.
Yeah, it was. It was weird. I was like, man, he's a general. Like, I'm just a Lance Corporal, you know. I may be 22 years old, but I mean, shit. I mean, He's a general, at least he's a two-star general, you know.
Yeah, no shit. He's not just a bullshit one-star general. He's a two-star. So you stay for the class, and you. What's your buddy's name that came up with you afterwards? What's that dude's name?
Stone.
Yeah, Stone was with you. So you came up at the end, and you were kind of a different dude at the end. You had a smile on your face. Stone had a smile on his face. What happened?
So I remember I told General Spinass when I got him there. He said, "Are you ready?" I said, "You got 20 minutes. You got 20 minutes. I don't think I can be able to do it because I'm not feeling this." And he said, "Just bear with me." And I said, "Okay." And I sat down, and I remember y'all started speaking. And I got through Major John Furness. He went, and then you went. And then I couldn't take it. I was so mad. I had all these thoughts going in my head. I was just fucking pissed. And I wasn't even comprehending what y'all were saying. I was only reflecting on my life, you know. And I stood up, and I remember I made eye contact with, General Furness, and I remember he nodded at me, and I nodded at him, and I remember my whole unit looking at me going, "What the fuck was that?" And I walked outside, and I couldn't take it. I had tears in my eyes. I was crying, and I had to pull myself together. I started shaking. I walked outside, and I got some fresh air, and I remember I was listening the whole time, and I realized y'all weren't talking about, like, "Hey, don't kill yourself." It was not a suicide prevention class. It was what you were telling me in the room. You're turning that trauma into joy. It was giving us tools how to deal with things that we've went through, all the trauma that we've experienced in our life, and how to win against it. But you wasn't sugarcoating anything, and he wasn't sugarcoating anything, and everyone else wasn't sugarcoating anything, which I really appreciated. And I remember hearing it, and I was calming down, and I finally calmed down. I came back to class, and I finally sat there, and I was listening to everything, and everything that you were saying with me, I went through it in my life. And it sucks, because I'm young, and I know I'm young. But it changed my life. And it made me feel good. It made me feel good. I felt like I wasn't the only one fucked up, which is funny. Because I remember at the end of class, I came up to you and you said, "Hey, Tiger, how does it feel being part of the fucked up crew?" And I said, "Honestly, it doesn't feel too bad now." And it was just like the point that y'all pointed out to me, the fact that everyone's going through something, but it takes a bigger man to speak up and get help.
So then, after the class, you actually, General Furness takes you and you go work on his little staff, right?
Yeah, so, after the class, I get a text message, and it was the weirdest way ever. After the class, like a day later, I got a text message. Hey, is this Kiger? I don't remember. I don't think he used any rank or anything like that. And I say, "Yeah, who the hell is this?" And that was, it's my phone. So I'm like, "There's no rank. Some number just texted me." So I'm responding the way I usually respond. "Yeah, who the hell is this?" "Oh, hey, it's Major General Furness." I said, "Hello, sir. Sorry, you know, how. Good evening, or good afternoon, whatever it was." And he said, "Hey, I want to help you. And I said, "What do you mean, sir? Like, I'm fine. I'm fine by myself. Like, I'll be okay. I really appreciate it, but I'm okay." He said, no, you're not okay. You need help. And I want to help. Me and Matt want to help you." And I said, "Okay." I said, what's going on?" And, He texted me and checked on me. He started asking about my life, and we talked, and he said, "I want you to get sober. I want you to start taking care of yourself. I want you to go to therapy. I want you to start talking about what's going on in your life, and I want you to take that trauma and turn it into joy, and practice the tools that you heard in the class." And I did. I took it very seriously. And if it wasn't for him and you, I wouldn't be where I am now. Absolutely not. And I went ahead and I got sober. I went to SARP. I'm coming up on, I'm 10 months sober now.
Tell everybody what SARP is.
SARP?
Yep.
Oh, man, they almost kicked me out. I wouldn't open up. I wouldn't open up at all. I wouldn't bat a tear. They didn't know how much I was drinking. I was drinking 2 bottles of Jack and a 6-pack of Coronas every single night to go to sleep, to help me clear my mind and go to sleep without thinking. I was getting consistently fucked up to make sure that I didn't have to face anything. And when I went to SARP, I was listening to all these people. They're like, oh, I drink a 24-pack, you know, every 2 days. You know, I drink a bottle, and a half a bottle of Jack, you know, between 2 days, or all this other stuff. And it just didn't seem like, you know, they were drinking as much as me. So it made me feel really awkward, and like I was really fucked up. And for like a week and a half, I didn't say anything. I didn't talk. I didn't talk at all. I just looked pissed off. I didn't really want to be there. I didn't want to take it seriously. And I remember one of the counselors, wasn't even my counselor, Teresa, which is, she's an angel. She pulled me to the side and said, Matt, we need you to talk because you're not cooperating with us. You're not doing anything, you know, we're asking you to do. You know, you got to give us something or we're going to have to drop you. And I said, that's fine. And she said, I don't want to drop you. No one wants to drop you. You look like you're going through a lot, but you got to speak. You got to do something. I said, okay. And then the next day, they had a movie day, and they played A Star Was Born with Lady Gaga and with Bradley Cooper.
Right.
And in the movie, you know, spoiler alert, but you haven't seen it, but in the movie, Bradley Cooper kills himself. He kills himself. And it was horrible because it reminded me of my dad. Because there was this guy in the movie that was talking to Bradley Cooper, telling me he was fucked up, he'll never be anything, he's worthless, he's a disappointment. All this shit, he reminded me of my brother, reminded me of all my friends that killed themselves. It reminded me of all these people that I lost, and I got so fucking mad because it's such bullshit that people should even talk to people like that. And put them in that state of mind where they think I'm better off not being here when they have family and friends that are here. And call me a piece of shit, but I'm selfish as fuck when it comes to someone's life. I'd rather you fucking live here and deal with your fucking pain and turn it into joy than fucking take yourself out of the picture and put your pain on me. Fuck that. I'm already caring enough. So it triggered me. It lit me up. It broke me down. It was bad. And he killed himself. And when he killed himself, I lost it. I burst out in tears. I got up and I walked out of the room. And the counselors were so fucking happy that I finally showed some type of emotion besides anger. And I walked out and I threw a dip in. You're not supposed to dip there. And I threw a dip in. I told everyone to fuck off. And they said, no, enjoy your dip. Enjoy your dip. You need it. And I said, really? And they said, yes. And then they're like, we need you to talk. And I remember I went back into that class. I sat outside for about 40 minutes by myself, calming down, enjoying my dip. And I walked back in that classroom, and I sat, and I gave my life story. And everyone in that room cried. Every single person in that room cried because they felt so bad for me. And I was even the one crying, which is crazy. And we talked, and they started helping me, and they gave me tools to help out with sobriety and help me out with a little bit of my sobriety. I still don't get too much sleep, but it's better than nothing. And they helped me more than they even realized. And they turned me into a better me, and which turned me into a better Marine. And then you, Mac, and then General Furness, y'all both did a number on me. Y'all helped me out. Y'all are showing me there's ways to go through things and trump it, and then turn that trauma into joy. And now I've been helping people since then. I can't tell you how many people that I've helped out. I've been helping people all my life, but now I'm helping them out in a different way, and it seems like it's a better way.
So let's talk about that. So, you know, again, when people hear your story, I mean, I know that, like, they look at me, if I'll tell somebody, yeah, I know a Marine, and I begin to, they look at me like, come on, man. All that, somebody telling a lie. And then when you tell them, like, yeah, it's not a lie, right? And then, but the transformation that you've gone through, so Matt and I are having dinner, I don't know, about a month ago, Matt? When I was back there, we're having dinner. And, yeah, Twin Peaks, pot roast. I don't know what Matt ate, but he ate a lot of food. And you were telling me, I looked at him and I said, so tell me, like, what have you been doing? Have you saved anybody? And he cocks his head, he looks at me, he goes, I've probably saved, he said, probably 9 people. He said, just off the top of my head, might be more. But he said, I'd probably tell you I've saved 9 people from killing themselves. And I just looked at him like, and I said, holy shit. He said, they're not all Marines. They're just, you know, people I cross paths with, you know, in my life. And so, Matt, talk about how that helping other people has really transformed, you know, such a traumatic childhood and even beyond childhood, how that's translated into your life as turning those experiences into joy.
Well, it's for me. So, like, I've always helped people out in my life.
Right.
Even when I'm going through things, and even when I lost my dad, I was the glue that held my family together. I was always there. But when I was dealing with things, I dealt with them by myself. And I remembered how shitty it felt. I mean, it was horrible. It was horrible that I always felt alone. I never had anyone. And I've always told myself, I'll be damned if I'm going to let someone feel that way. Because that's one of the worst pains you can feel. I don't give a fuck what anyone says. They can call me a pussy or a sissy or anything like that. That's all fine by me. But it's a horrible feeling. And no one should go through that. You should always have at least one person by you. And ever since that class, ever since I started working on myself and getting better and staying in contact with you and your finesse and reaching out and helping people, I've noticed helping people has helped me. Because I'm basically taking my own advice, and I'm practicing what I preach, too, on top of it. So, I mean, I remember when we were sitting there, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but when we were sitting there, I got, like, 6 text messages from 6 different people all thanking me. There's this girl that I was dating, and I was talking to her, and I actually gave my life story to her because she was going through a hard time. I was letting her know, you know, the pain doesn't go away, but you will get stronger, and you have people that care.
Oh, you mean that night at dinner?
Yeah.
Yeah, I noticed that you were on your phone. You weren't focusing on me. I noticed that.
Yeah. I had people texting and thanking me for saving their life. And it was crazy because we were talking about it while I was getting the text messages. And I remember at the end, I showed you all the text messages.
Right.
And I showed you all them thanking me. I said, here's 1, here's 2, here's 3. And you said,
yeah, he was trying to prove to me that it wasn't really a dick. Hey, Mac, I'm not really a dick here at dinner. I want you to know what I've been doing here.
So, there was this girl. She actually gave me a pill bottle of OxyContin. She had a whole ring of OxyContin. And she was going to take all of them that night and kill herself. And she actually gave me the pill bottle. And she told me, thank you. You saved my life.
Okay, let me ask this.
I do not want to kill myself.
Is there any better feeling in the world?
No. It was crazy. It made me emotional. I got like kind of teary-eyed. I was like, I can't believe I did that. Because at the end of the day, it kind of hit me. I was like, man, I really wish, you know, someone would have did that for my brother. But now, or my dad, or Victor, or my friend Smallings, or a couple other uncles, I wish someone would have did that, but at the same time, I can't change the past, but now I got that to look forward to, and I know if I've done it once, I can do it again. and it makes me feel great. It makes me feel, in a sense, when you lose something or you go through something traumatic in your life, there's a void that everyone's trying to fill. And honestly, I think that's the way to fill it, is to help other people. Because then you realize, hey, there's still more to life than just giving up. That's helping others.
Right.
And like you said, there's no better feeling in this world. And I, like I said, I can't tell you how many people that I've saved. I mean, I call my friends, you know, on the daily, and I check on them to make sure they're okay. And I tell them if they need to talk, they need to talk. They do not need to hold it in.
Matt Kiker, are you a corporate yet? Still last corporate?
Yeah, actually, I've been a corporate for a couple months, actually.
Boom! Congratulations, devil!
Yeah, thank you. They haven't given my promotion warrant, but I get out in freaking 2.5 months. So, I mean, I finally got it, though. Whenever they give me a promotion warrant, I'll wear it. I've had it for a couple months now.
Nice going. Congratulations. So,
thank you.
Matt is one of the special people that I've met, since I started, the first instance of me doing post-traumatic winning. And I wanted to have him on for a while to tell his story, because his story is an incredible one. I mean, you hear his story of, you know, what he went through when he was a little guy. And most of the time that crushes young people. And Matt has this spirit, but I mean, and maybe if it would have stopped when he was 9, and that would have been one, and he would have been done, maybe that would have been all, you know, but it, your life reminds me of my life, Matt, in that, you know, your head just keeps getting pushed back under the water. And like, no, look, I've had enough. Like, I got mine. Time for somebody else to get their head dumped. Like, oh no, motherfucker. It's time for you again. Like, oh man, how in the fuck? And then watching you this past year, and then hearing the number of people whose lives that you've impacted. And you know, the cool thing, Matt, is they're going to go ahead and they're going to change other people's lives. And that's you, man. That's you working through them. And it's the coolest thing in the world. And I wanted to have you on so people could hear you talk about it. And if people are listening to this who are struggling, I think your words that you just said are pretty instrumental in that. Trauma somehow or other creates a void, and you try to fill that void. A lot of times you act stupid. A lot of times you use alcohol. A lot of times you just try to wall it off and pretend that it isn't there. And I think that those are pretty wise words from a 20. How old are you? 22, 23?
22
years old, man. You're like as wise as grandpa with that shit.
Yeah, feel old, I'll tell you that. I know, but I definitely, like I said, I mean, there's not a damn person that can tell me in this world, you know, that's went through something that. Cause I do it. I still do it. You know, I'm mad enough to admit I still do it, but I'm working through it. I'm not perfect by no means, and I haven't overcame every single problem in my life. Hell, you know, it's gonna happen. I'm just gonna work through it and carry it. But I'm gonna do it the right way, and I'm gonna take care of myself. But there's not a damn person in this world that can't tell me when the alcohol wears off and you're not drunk anymore. Or the drugs wear off, and you're not fucked up anymore, or you're not busy at your job. When you lay down in your fucking bed at night because you have insomnia, or you have depression, anxiety, or you got all this stuff that's happening, you're like, there's not one fucking person in this world that can't tell me they lay in that bed and nothing goes through their mind.
Right.
You know, because I do it. I still fucking do it. And I have to remind myself, I came a long way. I'm not going back, and I'm going to keep taking care of myself. I'm going to do it the right way, and it makes me feel good that I have these tools, because like I said, I still lay in this bed. What if I could have changed this? What if I could have done this? And I got to realize that there's nothing I could have done, there's nothing I can do now besides take care of myself and help other people. And ever since I've been doing that, I've been feeling 10 times better.
Right.
If it wasn't for me doing that, I wouldn't, you know, I'm going to be a police officer when I get out. I go to the Marshall's Academy. I've been 10 months sober. I've been helping my family. My family and me have gotten 10 times closer. My friends, they've gotten better. They look at me as a role model. I've had multiple people come to me and talk to me, and I've helped them. They've also helped me. They don't even realize that. So they need, you know, people that's going through things, they need to understand this is a different time. It's not the old school ways anymore. Just to keep everything bottled up inside and lose your fucking mind. Don't do that. Be smart. Work smarter, not harder. Go fucking talk to someone. Get it out. Reach out. Get help. Get the tools.
You know, and it's not a dead end. Trauma is not a dead end, and that's the message, you know, that I want to make sure that everybody knows. Man, I don't know too many people that have lived through a whole lot more than Matt has. And if Matt can do it, the rest of us can do it. But there's some secrets to it. And to me, if you'll download those three goals and nine commandments of post-traumatic winning, and again, I didn't make that shit up. All of that has been given to me, right, by other people that I've spoken to here in the last 3+ years. That is the collective wisdom of this Marine culture, not the Marine Corps culture. It is the collective wisdom of Marines that have lived through it, right?
And
there's a difference. It's us. It isn't the institution that has that wisdom. And that's why, to me, it's so cool and it's so important. I could go through every one of those things and put a name or 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 names to them and say, oh, yeah, this guy. Oh, yeah, this girl. Oh, yeah, this. Oh, yeah, that conversation. Because that's where that shit comes from. But it's just the truth, and I'll tell you what, to me there's some incredible, important moments in your life. And one of the most important moments that I know I always have with people when I talk to them is when they look at you and say what Matt said to me, and that is, does it ever stop hurting? And so many times people give us bullshit answers.
Absolutely. And it, for me, that's a false fact. It's a false fact, and I think that's wrong. You're going to do more damage than good.
Well, you alienate people, right? If I would have looked at you, if I would have looked at you and said yes, you would have said okay, right?
Nope. I would have dropped that conversation right there.
Well, I don't know if you'd have done that in front of General Furness. What you might have done is said okay, and then as soon as we all left, you'd have walked the fuck out.
Yep, exactly. Because I knew you were bullshitting me.
Right.
Because I know a bullshitter. I've met many. My whole life seems like it's been like bullshit, but I'm doing better on it now. And the fact that y'all don't bullshit, the fact that post-traumatic winning is not bullshit, I mean, that goes a long way. Some people may not support it, but those motherfuckers don't support it. The motherfuckers that sugarcoat everything and try to slap a band-aid on it and look the other way. They don't want to face their demons head on. You got to face them. And that's the only way to make yourself better. And if you don't want to do better for yourself, then like you said, God bless. You know, I hope you take care of yourself. But if you don't want better for yourself, there's nothing that no one can do to help you.
All right, let me ask you one more question. We've been talking for about an hour and 15 minutes. What haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know about either what you've been through, where your life's going, the daily fight that you fight? And I think that's important, and you said it, Matt. You know, I still get up, and I have to fight because the shit doesn't go away. But I now have the tools, I now know what I need to do, and I now have goodness in my life, and I know I can do it. I think that's hugely important. But what haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know?
So yeah, I mean, every day I go through it. Every day. Every day I go through my sobriety. It's hard. It's very hard. It's hard to talk about things. I'm still learning how to deal with my emotions, because the only emotion that I felt from you know, fucking 9 years old to all the way to 22 was anger. I've hurt a lot of people. I've badmouthed a lot of people. I've put people in hospitals. I've been handcuffed multiple times. I became a raging alcoholic. I've died twice, you know. Luckily, my best friend fucking did CPR on me and fucking helped me out and brought me back. And thank God I'm still here. But every fucking day I wake up in my bed, and the hardest part of the day for me is to wake up and get the fuck out of the bed. That's the biggest goal for me, is get out of the bed. You roll out of bed and you fight and you face your demons head on. I still face my demons head on.
But,
I go to therapy.
But tell everybody, you have this confidence thing, though. That,
oh, man. When I was,
you want to know what a crazy motherfucker he is? Tell everybody the little routine you do before you leave your room every day.
All right, so this is my little ritual, a little routine I've done since I was young. I was real young. I've been doing it forever now. But I'll wake myself up in the morning. The hardest part is me getting out of bed. I get out of that bed, and I don't give a fuck what's going on in my life. If I just lost someone, something traumatic just happened, I get out of bed. I put my cameras on, I put my clothes on, whatever I got to put on, work uniform, you know, if it's on the weekend, whatever, pajamas, I get up, and I look myself in the mirror every single fucking day, and I tell myself, you're the fucking man. I point at myself, and I look at myself, and I say, you're the fucking man. I don't give a fuck what anyone says about me. I am the fucking man.
So wait a minute. Wait.
They won't fucking take that away from me.
You have roommates, though, right? It's not like you have your own room and shit like that, right? So you've had roommates. So what do your roommates think when you every day when you look in the mirror and say, you're the fucking man?
It fucking wears off on them. I've had a couple of roommates, and at first it throws them off because they see me and they go, man, this motherfucker doesn't sleep. He's got insomnia like a motherfucker. You can just read it on him. Like some days he's just not having a good day. Hell, when he wakes up, you can see that he's not having a good day. And I wake up and I look at myself and I say, you're the fucking man. And I fucking slap my ass or I brush my shoulders off and I fucking walk out the door and I say some random shit like, you know, let's fuck this day in the face, and I'll walk out. And everyone's like, you know, my roommate's like, what the fuck was that? And before I know it, you know, I get asked, Matt, why do you do that? And I tell him, I said, because I'm the only motherfucker that's going to tell me that. You going to tell me that? And then they laugh, and they say, no, I'm not going to tell you that. And I was like, exactly. So if you're not going to tell me, at least someone is. But goddamn it, it's going to be me. And before I know it, I see these motherfuckers trying to put confidence in their life. They put confidence in their life. They start trying to get cocky. And before I know it, I see them look at themselves in the mirror, and I can see them looking at themselves and thinking, you got this. You're the fucking man. And I've seen it. And my buddy Austin Berger, he's in the unit with me, too. And he also does that. I've helped him a long way. I actually stopped him from killing himself, too. And now that motherfucker, every now and then, I still ask him, I say, you still do it? And he says, yeah, I still do it. And the motherfucker wakes up, looks himself in and says, I'm the fucking man. I said, why do you do it? And he said, because no one else will tell me.
That's right. That's right.
If you're not in a competition with me, then who the fuck are you in a competition with?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you, one of the things I would say is, you know how when rank comes up, right? And I'll say, like, somebody will say, well, when I was on active duty, like, oh, majors. I'm like, yeah, majors, backbone of the Marine Corps. And everybody starts laughing, right? And I'm like, oh, really? They're fucking, they're not? Like, oh, but if I was a Lance Corporal, I'd say, everybody would go, oh, yeah, Lance Corporals. I'm like, fuck Lance Corporals, man. Majors, the backbone of the fucking Marine Corps. Why do you say that? Because I'm a major. Why the fuck else do you think I would say that? Right?
Exactly.
And if I'm doing it,
if you don't say it, who else is?
Nobody.
No one is. That's the simple fact of the matter is if you don't fucking support yourself, no one else is going to fucking do it. Okay? And that's the biggest part of self-care. You got to understand that. You got to watch out for yourself and you got to take care of yourself. Because if you can't fucking take care of yourself, and everyone's heard this fucking quote. If you can't love yourself, you can't love someone else, you know, when it comes to relationships. But interpret that into your fucking life. And what that interprets is, if you don't take care of yourself, how the fuck are you supposed to take care of anyone else? How the fuck are you supposed to be there for... If you're not emotionally stable, how can you be emotionally stable for someone else? It's physically and mentally impossible. You cannot do it. So the best place to start off with is yourself. And if you take care of yourself, you'll take care of other ones, everyone else.
All right. I haven't asked you this, but I'll ask you this now in front of everybody. You've been through some rough shit. Are you going to live a good life? Do you think your life's going to be happy? Because you've taken the first step, which is you're doing good stuff with yourself. Do you, when you look down at your future in life, Matt, do you believe you're going to live a happy life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think some bad stuff just came my way, though. Absolutely. I feel like I'm gonna live a great life. I think I'm living a great life now. I think my life has been great. With all the stuff that has happened in my life, it makes me who I am. And I wouldn't change that. If I was able to go back in time and stop my dad from committing suicide at this point, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Because it's made me who I am. Now, if I was able to be the same man that I am now and keep everyone alive, I would. Absolutely. But the trauma in my life and the journey and the events and obstacles that I have overcame has made me who I am and made me the man that I am to this day. And I'll stick to that. And I think from this point on, with all the tools that I've got from post-match winning and from SARP and being sober and therapy and taking care of myself, I think I'm a better man than I was 10 months ago. I think I'm a better man than I was a year ago. I don't like going backwards in life. I hit rock bottom, and the best thing about hitting rock bottom is there's only one place to go from there, and that's all the way up, and I'm going to keep climbing.
Yeah, and you have to know this about Matt, right? He doesn't go backwards in life. So we're having dinner, and so he's telling me about being a master mechanic. And I said, well, when you get out, why don't you just go get that last certificate and go make a shit ton of money again? And he looked at me and said, I never go backwards.
I'll never go backwards. I left that job. I left that part of my life in the past. I left that in the past, and I'm not going to go back to it because there's bigger and better things waiting for me on the other side. Now, will I be making as much money? I don't know. Who knows? But I can promise you this. If I don't make that much money in my next career, then I'll figure out a way to make more money if it makes me happy.
Right.
But I'm going to do whatever makes me happy, and I'm not going to go back in life. There's no point. You left your job for a reason. And when it comes to relationships, I never dated a girl twice. I left that relationship for a reason. I don't like moving backwards. There's no point in moving backwards. I don't believe in take two steps ahead and take three steps back. No, don't do that. You'll never move anywhere in life. Don't take any steps back. Keep moving forward. I don't care if you're going at, 2 miles an hour or 100 miles an hour. You're still moving. And that's the goal. You just keep moving.
Don't go backwards.
Never tell go backwards.
So your goal is you're going to go into law enforcement, but you have a very specific goal. There's something that goes on in this country and goes on internationally that pisses you off.
So the fastest route to get where I want to be, my goal is to be a detective, and I would like to work with human trafficking and child trafficking. I could give honestly two shits about drugs because that's going to happen regardless. Especially in the cartel. But human trafficking and child trafficking is fucked up. That shouldn't be a thing. You should not sell people for slaves and have them drugged out, human sex dolls. Like, that shouldn't be a thing. And it really gets under my skin. I think it's really fucked up that society and humans, we allow this. And if I can make an impact on that, I will. Just like reason why I joined the military, I wanted to make an impact and I wanted to, do my part. And I think I have. And when I get out, I'm going to continue doing that. I can't work a 9-to-5 job. I can't just wake up in the morning and get off at, 5, 6 p.m. and then come home, cook dinner, go sleep, repeat the same cycle every single fucking day. That's not for me. And it's for some people, but it's not for me. I'm here to do bigger and better things in life. I want to make an impact on this life. I want people to remember who the fuck I am. And I want everyone to know that I'm helping someone. When I die, I want people to come to my grave and say he was a great man.
He was.
And
I want to be a detective,
and that's the fastest route, is to join the police and do a couple of years in it, get some college in, get me some degrees in criminal justice, psychology, and then swap over and be a detective.
All right. And make sure you get on that tombstone. He was the man.
Exactly, the fucking man. Put it in there. The fucking man.
He was the fucking man. That shit is awesome. All right, Matt, first of all, I cannot thank you enough for doing this, man. I've told your story or pieces of your story, but I could never tell it like you have told it over the course of the last 90 minutes. So I just want to thank you. And the other thing I want to do is I just want to tell you, on behalf of all the people whose lives you touched, man, good on you. And you are, you know, when I think of people, when I think about post-traumatic winning, I hadn't, you know, you got to tell one more story before we get off. And that is, I had two people in mind when as I was listening to people tell these stories all the time. And I was thinking about, like, you know, I need to share this stuff because if people know this, you know, this will help them, and there should be no reason why, you know, we're all fighting this out alone and by ourselves, because we all know this shit, but there's no class in high school that teaches you this shit. There's no class in college. And the people that go through it, they don't want to talk about it. But the people that have been through it, they all know this shit, right? So why don't, and that's what post-traumatic winning is. Post-traumatic winning is an effort to share this information. And in my head, I had Matt Kiker in mind. I didn't know Matt Kiker, but I had somebody in who was in this dark shit that had their head shoved down in it repeatedly, or maybe just one time, and was struggling with it. That if they found out the fucking truth, that you can go to a better place, that they would in fact go there. And so I have Matt in my mind. The other guy who I met is Sergeant X. And Sergeant X and Matt both introduced post-traumatic winning the last time that, when I was in Camp Lejeune here about a month ago, I guess. So we went over to do it with Second Mall. And Matt was going to introduce it. And so that's when I tell everybody that he put the biggest fucking dip I've ever seen in somebody's mouth in that day. So talk to us about introducing post-traumatic winning. What was that like?
Oh, man, I was nervous, man. I don't have a problem speaking publicly or anything like that. I'm very outgoing for the most part. But when it comes to personal events in my life, I'm very on edge. I used to be very on edge about it and telling my story. Because I didn't want anyone knowing about me. I didn't want anyone feeling bad for me either. And I remember you asked me forever. You kept bugging it. And you kept bugging me. Come on, man. Do it. And I finally did it.
Well, I asked you at dinner. I asked you at dinner, and you said no.
So yeah, I said no.
We're sitting there at dinner, and I said, hey, I'm gonna do this thing, and I want you to come introduce it. And he just sits there. And he's eating, like, that shit ton of food that he got in front of him. And he said, I'd rather not. I said, all right, you know. And then, like, 10 minutes later, he looks at me and goes, I'll do it. So what happened?
I had a conversation with my mom, actually, the day before. I was talking to her about it. And I said, Mom, I've helped a lot of people out. And she said, yeah, you're doing great. I'm really proud of you. And I said, thank you. It means a lot. It really does. And I remember when I said no, I was thinking about it the whole time. So why'd you say no? Come on, man. Like, give your story. Someone needs to hear it. Someone needs to understand. I don't give a fuck. Out of 100 people, one person stands up and says, hey, I need to talk. I need to get stuff off my chest. That's one person. That's good. I remember I was thinking, I was like, man, I gotta do it. It'd be wrong for me not to do it. That would be selfish of me not to help someone else. There's no point in having the skills and the knowledge to better yourself just by giving your story and letting people know this is how you win. That would be the right thing to do. And the fucked up thing to do is be selfish and say, no, I'm going to keep everything to myself. And I knew that was wrong. And I was thinking about it. And I said, yeah, you know what? You're right. I won't do it. Because if I'm the fucking man, then I'm going to fucking do it.
You got to do it. You can't just 100%. You can't just say the man. You're the man. You got to be the fucking man.
Exactly. I can't say I'm the man and then not prove it. So,
no,
I mean,
exactly.
And then when I got off there, I remember I looked at John Finesse. I said, you mind if I throw a dip in? Because I'm really nervous. And he said, absolutely. You can throw a dip in. And I packed my can, and I'm actually quitting dipping.
What?
I'm quitting. I'm trying. It's hard, but I'm quitting. I go through, like, maybe one can every 2 weeks.
Whoa, that is that's like quit, man. That's not quitting.
Yeah, I'm trying. But so I remember I stood up, and I looked around everyone, and I packed it one time, and I threw it in. And I looked at everyone in my head and I said, here we go. And I grabbed my spitter, and I remember Joe Fernandez, he looked at me, and he, like, went to get up to grab, like, give me his cup so I could have a spitter, and I was like, no, sorry, I got a spitter. And I remember I started off kind of like, all right, you're the fucking man. And I was pacing, and I remember you knowing I was quiet for a second.
You were?
And I was pacing, that was me talking to myself, you're the fucking man, you can do this. Fucking talk, you know, it's no different from therapy. If you can talk in therapy, you can do this. And I said, all right, let's do this. And I remember I got like this, like, not anger. I used anger because, you know, that's like my primary emotion, which is a secondary emotion. But I used that to fire me up to start going. And I remember once I started going, my hand started shaking. And I don't know if you saw the mic or not in my hand, but it was shaking.
No, I didn't notice.
Yeah, I was shaking the whole time. And I remember I was sitting there talking. I couldn't look at everyone. I remember pacing back and forth. I remember I just started talking about my life. And I remember I looked up, and instead of everyone going, man, because like when I first stood up, and I remember everyone looking at me. I saw everyone looking at me. And I saw everyone's fucking face. Everyone's face was like, oh, here we go with some bullshit ass, don't kill yourself, you know, bullshit. Same look that I had on my face when I walked in. And I remember when I got done giving my story about my dad, I looked up back at everyone, and I remember everyone's face was just, holy shit, this is real. Like, this is not sugar-coated. This is very raw. And I could read everyone's face, and everyone's face read, I've went through something, and I haven't talked about it. So it just made me keep going, and I started going more into depth with things, and that's when I finally came to the conclusion, all right, I'm done talking, but I want these motherfuckers to know this isn't a suicide prevention, don't kill yourself class. I wanted them to understand this is a class and a trade. Basically, in my head, it's a trade, because you're going to get a particular set of skills and tools to use to help someone else out and help yourself out. And make people better and make yourself better. And I wanted them to understand that. And it was very fulfilling. It made me feel very good. I had a lot of people come up to me after that class and thank me. I got people's numbers that I still keep in contact with. They gave me their life story. And they reached out to me personally. I mean, it was great. I couldn't describe the feeling besides joy. You know, it was amazing.
And then you did it again on Friday.
Yep, and I did it again on Friday. And then Friday, I had even more people come up to me and talk to me.
I walked up to him, like, we were getting ready to leave the first time you did it. And, you know, he was down. I was packing my shit up and all that stuff. And he was talking to a Marine. And so I didn't know if you were going to ride back with us or how you were getting back to Mainside. I said, is that a friend of yours? And afterwards, and you said, no.
He's going to be, though.
He's going to be. He said, no, I never met him in my life. He just came up wanting to talk. But that was cool. And then to complete my story, the other person I had in my head was Sergeant X, who Matt got up and talked on Friday first. And Sergeant X got up and talked second. And Sergeant X's story was he didn't want to go to the fucking class either because he'd been to all those bullshit classes. But when he left, he looked at his best friend and said, that's the best fucking class I've ever sat through in my life. His father commits suicide in March. So less than 90 days later, his father commits suicide. And his story is, I knew what to do because of that class. I knew what to do for me. I knew what to do for my friends. I knew what to do for my family. And I just wanted to thank you. And those are the two groups of people who I had in my head as I had Marines from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Desert Storm, Iraq, Afghanistan, you name it. All tell me a different version of the same fucking stories. And that is the path that I've gone down, Matt. That's the path that you're going down. But the difference is, right? The difference is taking that wisdom, combining it with your experience, and then changing other people's lives and the effect that that has on your own life. And Matt Kiker is a walking, breathing, fucking example of he's the man and he fucking does it. And so, dude, I cannot tell you how proud I am of you, and that we're partners in this. And that's the other thing I love. Matt and I were talking before he came on. Our lives are a lot alike. And it's just cool, Matt, to know you. It's cool to watch you, and now it's cool to be partners with you. And thanks, thank you so much for coming on and doing this.
I really appreciate it. Don't thank me. I gotta thank you and John Furness, and you know, y'all changed my life. And if it wasn't for y'all, like I said, I don't know where I'd be. I'd probably be dead right now, honestly. I mean, the raw version of it is I probably would have drank myself to death already. So I mean, I can't thank y'all enough, and it's been an honor working with you and John Furness. It's been an honor, you know, changing people's lives and helping out. It's been an honor, you know, you giving me these tools to better myself, and I cannot thank y'all enough. But the crazy thing is to me is, man, how does it feel calling me the man?
Fuck, it doesn't bother me one bit, man. You could be 1B. That's all right. I got no issue with that. No, man, I'll call you the man anytime. You get out there and not only you take care of yourself, but, you know, all the different lines you've impacted and whatnot. It's just a cool story. And it's a story that I want to make sure that we tell from a louder megaphone, because there's more people out there whose lives we can change. And big, you know, story was, 2 weeks ago about the suicide rate in the United States military. It doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't.
It does not. And it's a shame that it is that way. But I'm very thankful and very happy that we have this now, and when it started from you. So I mean, like, all the glory and the honor should be, like, it should go to you, because if it wasn't for you, you've impacted so many people, and I've heard it from, I can't tell you how many times I've heard it, Max, from multiple people, from sergeant majors, from majors to sir, you know, General Furness. I've heard it from another general. They know you, and it's just something about you. And I'm an example too, because I said it too to other Marines when I talked to them and people, just random people, about you. I said it's something about Mac that he just gets to people. I mean, when he talks to you, he doesn't sugarcoat. He's very raw, and he lets you know he fucking understands, and he has something about him that just gets you to fucking talk. And that's the best thing. So I'm thankful for you and this program and the class. It's amazing. It's amazing. It's amazing how much you've done. And it, like I said, I can't thank you enough. Honestly, you should get an award for it. So
who really is the fucking man?
I mean... Yeah, I would have to say, you know.
We are. Well, how about this? You know, how about this? We are the man. All right.
We are the man. We are the credit.
Yeah, I'll rescue that from you from choking on that shit. All right, Matt. Thank you very much. Don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next, right here on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network. How about that? 22 years of age. Been through all that. And, you know, to me, the lesson for me over and over again is, if you challenge people and you appeal to their goodness, they'll respond. And, you know, he's part of that segment of the population that, you know, he grew up in that shit. That's not supposed to happen with him. And so, Matt Kiker, how about that? Please, share that interview with anybody who you know that's struggling. Anybody. Because not one bit of his trauma is associated with anything that happened in the Marine Corps. It's just life. The shit of life. And best of all, You know, you hear his attitude about the future. He's going to live a great life. Because he's the man. So, again, I can't thank Matt Kuiker enough for sharing his story with us. And I wanted to do that interview for a while. And it's a great interview. I mean, he never done anything like that. He's just relaxed and just, you know, telling the truth. And that's, to me, the most powerful thing that people need is tell the truth and then challenge people and while you're showing them the path that you can go to a good place, man. You can go to a good place. So, anyway. Thank you very much for listening today. As I said, share that interview with anybody you know that's struggling. Anybody that you know that's struggling. And then say, look, man, I want to talk to you. I want to show you these 3 goals and 9 commandments. And I want you to help me change other people's lives. And watch what happened, because that's exactly what Matt has done. And again, you know, the other person that, you know, I can't say enough about is, you know, Dave Furness. And, you know, not everybody would have brought a program like Post-Traumatic Winning. You know, they would have heeded the advice of a whole bunch of different people and said, oh, no, don't do that. But God bless him for doing it. And the other people that I need to say is that, and you know, Bob Nielsen, who's the godfather of All Marine Radio. I told you I've been doing accounting. So I've seen Bob's support. He's kept All Marine Radio on the air. So Bob Nielsen is the other guy who saved Matt Kuiker's life. So a huge thank you to Bob. I would be remiss, well, I won't do that. Anyway, have a great day. God bless Matt Kuiker, man. Awesome. On a Monday, All Marine Radio. Over and out. One more thought as I'm going out the door. Live on the road of the high life, man. That's him. That's why the song's so appropriate. Have a good one. Out.